Keeping Up with Dr. Andrea Tooley, ophthalmology resident and soon-to-be fellow. She is also a blogger, a foodie, a fashionista, and a fitness aficionado. Welcome to the 244th episode of Admissions Straight Talk, Accepted's podcast dedicated to graduate admissions and helping you approach the application process thoughtfully and successfully. I'm Linda Abraham, the founder of Accepted and the host of this podcast. My mission and passion are to help you show that you both fit in at your target schools and are a standout in the applicant pool. The result? You get a message one day that causes you to jump up and down shouting, "Yes, I'm in!" And not only in, but in at the best program for you. I'm so pleased to welcome back to Accepted Dr. Andrea Tooley, currently an ophthalmology resident at the Mayo Clinic, who will soon be starting a fellowship in oculoplastics in New York City. Let's learn more. Andrea, welcome back to Admissions Straight Talk.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. I'm really happy to be back.
It's a pleasure. I know you're a returning guest, and somebody could go listen to the old episode, and we'll link to it. But can you tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, where you grew up and went to college and all that good stuff?
Yes, absolutely. So I am originally from Sarasota, Florida. I was born there and lived there until I was 16. And then my family moved to Indiana, and I stayed in Indiana for college. I went to Butler University in Indianapolis, and I was a double major in English, literature, and chemistry. And then I stayed in state for medical school. I went to IU, Indiana University, for my medical school. And then I came to Mayo Clinic for residency. I did my intern year at Mayo, and now I'm in my final year of ophthalmology residency at Mayo.
Okay, great. When we spoke last, it was winter 2015. That's actually episode 95, which listeners could find at accepted.com/95. At that point in time, you were starting your ophthalmology residency. How has it been for you?
Oh, it's been so great. I feel like a different person than I was when I was a first-year opto resident. It's such a transformative residency. I think anybody who knows about ophthalmology knows that you don't learn very much at all in medical school about the eye. And so coming into residency, you just know nothing. And there are lots of other specialties that way, but you feel like a different person just a few years later. It's amazing how much you learn. And it's been wonderful. I've absolutely loved my experience at Mayo. I wouldn't trade it for anything. I'm going to be sad to leave. It's just been great.
What did you like best about your experience at Mayo?
Oh my gosh, so many things. I think one thing, and this really kind of captivated me about Mayo right away, is just the culture. I think it's a kind of a different or very unique culture at Mayo. It's very collaborative and very focused on patient care, but also innovation and research. And it's just a fun, exciting environment to be. And then it's a tremendous institution. And so I feel very lucky being a resident somewhere where I have so much support, financial support for research and all kinds of support for traveling for conferences, or just the faculty are amazing. I feel like just being at such an institution like Mayo has made me want to be better and work better. But then the Department of Ophthalmology, I feel, has been just terrific for me. It's a really happy environment. All of our attendings are wonderful and have been great mentors to me. And then we get a lot of autonomy as residents. That was something I wanted in a residency program. And so I think I've grown a lot. I've gotten to do a lot of stuff on my own and kind of learn and become my own ophthalmologist, which has been great. And yeah, it's a wonderful place.
Now you're now, I guess you're a fourth year resident, PGY4, right?
And that's right.
Are you at this point mentoring the PGY1s?
Yes. So the way that our residency program is set up, so the PGY1s are interns and they're doing internal medicine, and not all of them are at Mayo. Some of them could be at other institutions, but the PGY2s are the first year ophthalmology residents, and they work alongside us as third year ophthalmology residents day in and day out. And so it's so fun to have that mentor mentee role that I had when I was a first year with my chief resident. And so we're seeing patients together and I'm helping teach them, and they make me better because they ask just the greatest questions and they're so curious and they want to know, and it makes me want to learn more. And it's such a fun relationship to have in residency. It makes the days just really fun.
That's great. What do you think could be improved about the residency program?
Well, there's always things that can be improved. I think no residency is perfect. There's always little things that we're trying to get our program director to make better, like our didactic sessions or different lectures or improving surgical numbers in certain areas. I think in general, it's a really well-rounded residency. I've been lucky that I've gotten to experience a few other residencies. I did an away rotation, and then our program sends us to Minneapolis to be at the VA hospital for 3 months. Mm-hmm. And so we work with the University of Minnesota residents there. So you get to learn about their residency program. And every program is so different, and there's no perfect way to do it. And so I think it's just finding like where you fit and where you're happy. And, you know, at the end of the day, everybody becomes an ophthalmologist. And so you just want to be where you think you're the best version of yourself. And I feel like it's been that way for me at Mayo.
I mean, I've talked to, you know, several different doctors and residents, and most of them are overall happy and pleased with their residency program, but you're definitely happier.
And some of it may,
some of it more satisfied, I should say, not just happier. Some of it may be a matter of personality. Some people are easier to please, some people are harder to please. But did you, in looking back on your program, I mean, on choosing Mayo Clinic, and obviously they also chose you, but what were you looking for that maybe you found particularly useful as you look back on the experience?
That's a great question. One of the biggest things I was looking for in an ophthalmology residency was a resident-run clinic. And not every ophthalmology program has that. There's actually not that many programs that have that. But to me, it was really important because ophthalmology is such it's a field where I think you really have to do it to learn it, and you can't just watch somebody else do it, because so much of it is either pattern recognition or thinking for yourself. And there's a lot of exam skill. There's a lot of technical skill in being an ophthalmologist, just being able to look at the eye and know how to do that. And so I wanted a resident run clinic where I would have a lot of responsibility, because I knew that that would make me good. And I knew that just watching somebody else or always being in an attending clinic wouldn't work for me. Like, I needed to be on my own. And so Mayo had a resident run clinic, and that was one reason that I ranked them so highly. And all the other programs I ranked high, same thing. They had a resident clinic. So that was huge for me. And then I also wanted to be somewhere where I felt challenged. I wanted to be somewhere where I felt like I was maybe, I don't know. I think when I was interviewing, I just wanted to feel lucky to match there. I really kind of wanted to go somewhere that was a reach. And I didn't want to feel comfortable or feel like the best resident. And Mayo, when I interviewed, I remember feeling so nervous and scared and thinking, man, I am not good enough to be here. And so I just think that I don't know, it's made me want to be better. And that was something I kind of wanted. I wanted to be somewhere that I knew was going to push me.
Okay.
If that makes any sense.
Yeah, I think so. Now the one, I was poking around on your blog, and I noticed the one thing you weren't that crazy about was primary call. Can you tell us? Can you tell us what that is? And did you ever adjust to it?
Yes. Oh man, primary call is rough. Any ophthalmology resident will understand, and every residency program does it different. So some ophthalmology is 3 years after your 1 year of internship, and so some programs you take primary call all 3 years. At Mayo, you only do it your first year. And primary call just means that you're the first line person holding the pager. So at any time of the night, any time of the day, 24/7, 365, if somebody needs an ophthalmologist within your health system, whatever that means, that maybe that's just your hospital, or maybe for us, it's all of Mayo Clinic health system. So like Minnesota, Wisconsin, it's like a big area that, if they need an ophthalmologist, they're calling you and you're getting that page. And so primary calls divided between the residents, and every program does it differently. But at Mayo, it's all the first years, and so there's only four residents.
Okay.
So every fourth day, yeah, so every fourth day, you're the one. And it's tough because you're waking up, you're being woken up at night every fourth night. It's very rare to sleep through the night when you're on primary call. And then we take a weekend at a time, which is actually, some programs are much busier than we are. I think at Mayo, we're relatively busy, but not as busy as other programs where it would be not feasible to take an entire weekend at a time because it's so busy. So for us, I think it's right on that edge. It's not that busy so that we can actually do it all in 1 year, but it's busy enough that it really takes it out of you. So that first year is rough. You're tired, you're being woken up, you don't have a consistent schedule. And then I think also just the psychological toll of holding the pager. I can't explain it, but when you know that you can, that pager can go off at any time, I think you just have a higher baseline cortisol and your heart rate's a little faster and it's harder to relax. It's harder to get a good night's sleep. You're always on edge. And it just, at least for me, it physically affected me. I could feel it in my body when I was on call. And it's that's the only way I know how to explain it, but it's just this uncomfortable feeling for however long you're holding the pager. Even if it's
is it kind
off,
of like when you have to get up unusually early and you wake up a half hour before the alarm or something
up.
Like that? Yes.
Exactly. You keep waking up. Yes. You keep waking up looking at your pager. You keep waking up thinking it's going off, or you just can't fall asleep because you're anticipating it going off.
Or you're worried about oversleeping.
Or you're worried about oversleep. It's everything. And it's silly because I would never be upset about going in to see a patient. Like every time you go in to see a patient, you're doing what you love. You're happy to do it. You're the expert in eyes at that moment. And so that's your job. And so you're never mad about having to go in, but it's just the fact that you might have to. It really takes it out of you. And I never got used to it. And it was I don't know if anybody ever gets used to it. It's not an easy year. But the only good thing is that it's only a year and then it's over and you never have to do it again at Mayo. Every program is different. And I think that's one thing that makes residency so challenging in any field,
sure,
but in ophthalmology, especially.
Now, you did have some call occasionally after that first year, didn't you?
We do. And this is just our structure. So the first year residents take all the primary call. The second years are on backup. So the first years will call the second years when they have questions, which is a lot. But just not having to hold the pager, like if somebody calls your cell phone in the middle of the night, for some reason it's totally different and all that anxiety is just gone. And it's not hard to see the patient as a second year because the first year's already seen them. They've already done all of the legwork. You just have to come in and take a look and say, yeah, I agree. Or no, we should probably order this test or whatever. And then as a third year on call, you really only come in when it's surgery. So if there's a big trauma and they need to go to the operating room that night, that's the only time that you're going in the middle of the night. Otherwise, they might call you to run something by you or ask you a question. But for the most part, it's just so much easier when you're not the first line.
Right. And that's probably combined with the fact that you're the least experienced at that point. You know, it's...
Yes. Yep. Yep, exactly.
You never know what it's going to be.
Yep, you might not know what it is. All of those things combined, it makes it pretty rough. But it's amazing how good you get. Your clinical skills get really good really quickly. And you got to go through it. Everybody goes through it.
Right, right. How much, I'm just curious, and we might have discussed this last time, I don't remember, how much of a decision to pursue ophthalmology was a matter of just interest in the eye, and how much of it was more lifestyle driven?
It was zero lifestyle driven. I didn't think about that at all.
Okay.
I really fell in love with the eye and the idea of eye surgery. And I wanted to be a surgeon. That was first and foremost. I knew that I didn't want to just do medicine. I really wanted to do surgery. And then I was fascinated by the eye and, microsurgery and ophthalmic surgery were really interesting to me and seemed like a very rewarding career. And I also was really interested in international work, which is great for ophthalmology. It seemed very gratifying to help somebody with their vision. And so I didn't think about lifestyle at all. Maybe I should have. And I know a lot of people do, especially if you have families or if you're coming to medicine later in life, then you absolutely should think about it from a lifestyle point of view, but I didn't.
Okay, great. Now, you announced last spring that you have been accepted to an oculoplastics residency in New York City, starting, I guess, this summer, right? What is oculoplastics, and why did you choose it?
Yeah, so oculoplastics is one of the fellowships within ophthalmology. It's a two-year fellowship, and the official title is Ophthalmic Plastics and Reconstructive Surgery. Mm-hmm. And it's the one fellowship in ophthalmology that's really different than all the others, because you pretty much stop doing anything inside the eye and you focus on the tissue around the eye. And so ophthalmic plastic surgeons will treat any disease affecting the orbit, which is the eye socket, and then the ocular adnexa, so the skin around the eye, so the eyelids, the tissue around the eye, even cheek, forehead, kind of everything around that. And then the lacrimal system, which is the tear drainage system, which goes into your nose. And so I had no idea I wanted to do oculoplastics going into residency. I think a lot of people coming into residency maybe have an interest in retina or have an interest in glaucoma because they've done research in that field or whatever. But I didn't know anything about plastics. And it wasn't until I did my first rotation in plastics as a first year, which was November of my first year of ophthalmology, that I really loved it. And then throughout my first year, I tried to keep an open mind, but I just kept favoring oculoplastics. And then I had to make the decision pretty early because it's an early match. But I think what I liked about it most is that I didn't realize going into ophthalmology that I wouldn't love intraocular surgery as much as I thought I would. And it's great. I think intraocular surgery is great, but I really felt like I was missing anatomy and just all of the regular surgical principles of macroscopic surgery, because surgery inside the eye is totally different. And you don't think about that as a medical student, or at least I didn't appreciate that it would be so different, but it's just completely different. And I really love the kind of surgical creativity that you can have with reconstruction. So this would be people who have big skin cancers that have to get pieces of their eyelid removed, and then you have to refashion them an eyelid. And no two surgeries are the same if there's reconstruction. And that's kind of the art of plastic surgery.
I was thinking this sounds more like cosmetic surgery, really.
There is a big cosmetic component. And so you can absolutely do cosmetics and do eyelid lifts and Botox and fillers and all kinds of things if you want to be focused on cosmetics. And then you can do a lot of functional things. So people who have droopy eyelids because of age or because of other nerve injuries or trauma, or people who have horrible trauma and have their eye socket broken and need it reconstructed or fixed, people who have big cancers. And then the other thing is that you can do orbital surgery, which is something I'm very interested in. And so that's the eye socket. And all kinds of things can go wrong back there. There's all kinds of different tumors that you can get in your orbit. People with thyroid disease that get really bulgy eyes, they need to have surgery to help fix all of the inflammation in their orbit. And you can do things for children who have craniofacial abnormalities. It's really amazing all the different things that you can do. And the surgery is incredible. You can do a lot of combination surgery with neurosurgery and with ENT or ear, nose, and throat surgeons.
Did you ever read the book Wonder?
No, but it's on my list.
It's actually meant for preteens. It's not supposed to be an adult book. I thought it was wonderful.
I have heard so many people say you're like the fourth person to tell me about it. And so I have to read it, especially because I'm so interested in that.
Yeah, I understand they're coming out with a movie of it, but I would go for the book personally without even having seen
the
book.
Yeah, the book's always better.
Right.
The book is always better.
But it's about a boy with a serious facial deformity, I think also around the eyes. They don't show really, I mean, there's a drawing allegedly of what he looks like, but most of it is just described. And and he's homeschooled, I think, until the age of 10. And then his parents decide, you know, it's time for him to go to school. And he has his very serious facial deformities. He's obviously on the brink of puberty. And he starts school. And there are some kids that are nice, and there are some kids that are not so nice, which really makes life, right? And it's a I thought it was a fascinating book. I enjoyed it.
Oh, great. Thank you.
Okay. A little off topic here, but I guess not so off topic.
No, that's
considering your interests.
I'm very interested in that.
I'd like to ask you, and this, I guess, goes a little bit to the back to the primary call question. Was there ever a time, you know, you've completed your medical school, you've done the internship part of your residency, you've done residency, you managed primary call. Was there ever a time in this approximately 8 years where you thought you made a mistake and you thought of quitting?
No.
Good. Okay.
No. So there have been many times that have been a huge struggle through college, medical school, and residency. I can think of specific months throughout all of those, or even semesters, like second semester, sophomore year of college, in my entire second year of medical school, and like January, February of my first year of my first year of ophthalmology residency. All of those times have been really rough, and I would never want to relive them. But I never thought of quitting ever. I think I've just always, I don't know if it's my personality I've just always been kind of one foot in front of the other. You'll get through it. But those times have been super challenging and really difficult to get through. And I think that to say you can get through all of medical training without having any times that you struggle is just unrealistic. I think everybody struggles in different ways.
And at different times.
You know, lots of people. And at different times, exactly. And I think lots of people either think about quitting or rethinking their path or completely redoing their career options. I never did. I really want to be an ophthalmologist. I really want to be an ophthalmic plastic surgeon. And I've always still been able to see the light at the end of the tunnel, even though things have been really hard and it's not been fun. I think I've never lost sight of the end goal. And then also you really have to find joy in the things that you do every day. And so I've never not loved seeing patients. And so even when it's awful, seeing patients is just, it's the best thing ever. I really love it. And I really love being a doctor. And even in medical school, there were classes that I loved or certain things that still brought me enough joy that you could get through it.
Right. I asked this question very intentionally because most young doctors or early career doctors, medical students, I ask it more of residency, residents. I think it's really important for medical students and pre-meds to know that even though you might hit those bumps in the road, you can get through it. And people who are very happy doctors will have those moments.
Yes, everybody has those moments.
And almost every pre-med, resident, doctor that I've spoken to has been able to identify, either to say, yeah, there was one rotation that was just awful and I wasn't sure I could get through it, or to say there were, you know, bad days, bad weeks, bad classes, and I just kept plugging away. Okay. I was poking around on your Instagram page and saw pictures of you on Capitol Hill. You indicated you were involved in advocacy. How did you get involved and what were you advocating?
So I was able to travel to DC last spring with the American Academy of Ophthalmology as one of their advocacy ambassadors. So they choose trainees, either residents or fellows, to go and be part of the American Academy of Ophthalmology's advocacy effort on Capitol Hill one day out of the year. And during that day, we go and we speak with all of the state senators and our legislators about bills that are affecting our patients, or new legislation that could help us. And so the things that we talked about were some legislation that had to do with NIH funding and funding for ophthalmology research from the Department of Defense. There's a lot of traumatic injuries to the eyes and people lose vision, and we need more research to help with that. And then just in terms of NIH funding, the National Institutes of Health, that there's a ton of funding going into just incredible research for eyes. So we advocated for that. And then also different legislation that involves medication expenses for our patients. And then a few different bits of legislation that make it harder for us to adequately treat our patients in clinic every day. And so the Academy of Ophthalmology as a whole kind of selects these issues that are important to us. And that's based on Academy leadership. And then they teach us as trainees why this is important and how this is affecting our patients. And it was so eye-opening, because I think as a resident and a medical student and anybody in this training environment, you're so focused on learning the medicine, learning how to do surgery, learning how to treat your patients, that these big picture things like advocacy and legislation, they're not even on your radar, or at least they weren't for me. And I don't have any background in politics or anything like this, so I just was completely clueless. And it was so wonderful for me to be able to learn about this. And then besides just having the one day on Capitol Hill, they also use it as a time for the trainees to help teach us about being involved in leadership within ophthalmology as a national organization. So how to develop our leadership skills and be involved with ophthalmology as a whole, which I think is great, because if you get kind of plugged in to that early, then you can continue to be involved versus if everybody kind of just spreads out into their career and forgets about our organization as a whole, then you don't get involved. And so it's important to keep our group strong so that we can help our patients, because that's what it's all about at the end of the day.
Right.
And I just loved it. I'm trying to go back this year. I want to be able to go every year and continue to be involved in advocacy and help other trainees learn that they can get involved too. Because I think you think, oh, that's not for me. You know, I'm just a resident. I don't need to be involved with the big national organization, but you should. And we're the future of all of our individual specialties. And so why shouldn't we be out there? And we're the ones who see all these patients. I mean, we're all seeing patients, but as a resident, I think you have a different perspective and you're still treating patients and you're working as a doctor. So we have a unique kind of perspective that we can help. And yeah, I loved it. I felt really, really grateful to be able to go. I went as part of the Minnesota Academy of Ophthalmology. Mm-hmm. I sit on the board as one of the resident members. And so I got to go represent Minnesota, and it was just super.
Wow. Okay. It's a completely different.
Yeah, I would encourage anybody to get involved, even medical students with the AMA. I think there's all kinds of things you can do, and it's just so different, and you don't think about it when you're studying from your textbooks, and it's great.
Okay. Are you keeping up? So now you're a resident, your chief resident, I guess. Advocating, and are you also able to keep up with your fitness, food, and fashion interests?
Yes. I don't know as much about my fashion interests. Probably not. But the
scrubs.
Food is-
I say scrubs are not very fashion. Yes.
Exactly. That's my daily fashion routine is scrubs. But yeah, fitness and staying healthy is super important to me. It always has been. And whenever I let that kind of fall to the wayside, I immediately notice it in my general mood and energy and productivity. And so it's very important for me to kind of stay healthy and eat lots of plants, lots of vegetables and fruits and things, and then keep up with my workout routine, which changes a lot. I actually just started kind of a new time. Like I said, my residency sends us to Minneapolis for 3 months. And so I was up there at the VA, which is about an hour and 15 minutes from where Mayo Clinic is in Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
And so my husband and I were living apart during the week, and then either he would come up or I would go home during the weekend. And so I joined a yoga studio up in Minneapolis that I absolutely fell in love with. And I went every single day after work. And I had a really easy schedule up there that allowed me to go in the evening, which and I prefer to exercise. But now that that rotation is over and I'm back in Rochester with my husband, I made a deal that he would take care of our dog in the morning while I went and worked out. And then I would take care of the dog in the evening while he goes to the gym. And so I've been doing morning workouts for the past couple of weeks now, which is not my favorite, but better than nothing.
I guess you got to get up really early for that one.
I do. And I get up really early anyways. I've always been a really early riser. And so I'm going to get up early anyways. And it's just I either study or do work like research or go to the gym. And so now I'm just going to the gym in the morning. And that's good.
Okay. Now, you've successfully applied to medical school, to residency, and to a fellowship. How do those application processes differ? And I don't mean that, you know, one looks at the MCAT and one looks at the STEP exam. I mean
sure.
In terms of your process as an applicant, other than the exams, other than the fact that in one case you're talking about your undergraduate grades, your medical school grades, your performance reviews, you know, so I'm not talking about the obvious stuff. I'm talking about the more subtle stuff.
Sure, of course. So I don't have very many good things to say about my residency application because I applied early decision to IU, and so I only applied to one school because it was early decision, and that's you can only apply to one. And so
that was for medical school. I think you said residency, but you meant medical school, right?
Oh, I'm sorry. Thank you. Yes, I meant medical school.
Okay.
Yes. So that's kind of cheating. I don't know if that's cheating, but I knew I wanted to stay in state at IU. I didn't want to have to pay for out-of-state tuition. I felt like I was a pretty competitive applicant for the early decision program. A lot of medical schools for early decision have kind of set criteria. You have to have a certain GPA and a certain MCAT. As long as you meet that and you have a reasonable application, then your likelihood of acceptance is pretty high.
Mm-hmm.
And so I felt like I was decently competitive in that sense. And so I went ahead and applied early decision. So it's only one interview for medical school and that was it. So I didn't have the whole experience of applying to many medical schools. So I can't say much there. But for residency, looking back on the whole process, I think I was pretty naive, at least for ophthalmology. It's a really small world and people know people. And so I think, for me, I wanted my letter writers to be people that I felt knew me really well, which is super important, but I didn't think about having anybody with a big name, which I think sometimes is also a strategy that people use. So I had people that nobody knew write my letters, which it ended up all working out well for me, but I had absolutely no strategy. I just had people that knew me the best write my letters, and I wrote a very heartfelt personal statement, and I applied and I interviewed at as many places as I could, and I matched at Mayo, and I'm so lucky. I think that at least for ophthalmology, in terms of having a successful application experience, it's important to really show how interested you are in ophthalmology. Mm-hmm. And I definitely done that. I had so much volunteering and research within ophthalmology that just looking at my resume, there was no question that that's what I was passionate about. And I think that that's very helpful. But I had a great experience. I interviewed all over. I loved everywhere that I interviewed. And yeah, I feel really lucky that I matched somewhere great. I didn't have anybody make phone calls for me, which I think some people do for residency. But like I said, I think I was just very naive about the whole process.
Well, it worked out pretty well for you. You ended up at the Mayo Clinic.
It did. It really did. Yeah, it worked out really well. And I'm so happy. And I'm really lucky the way that it worked out. I mean, I think I had a strong application, but I wasn't as strategic as I could have been hearing things from some of my peers and co-residents about, doing a Waze and having really big name people write their letters or having people make phone calls or all kinds of things that you can do. I didn't do any of that.
I think you're almost illustrating a point here. One is that you don't have to, exactly. But you did have to show a real interest in the field that you were applying to.
Yes.
And that's actually something
I'm clear.
I'm really glad you're highlighting it because that's one of the biggest mistakes we see residency applicants make. We've actually occasionally, not too often, seen people basically take their MCAS personal statement and try and use it or adapt it to their residency personal statement.
Oh, no.
It really doesn't work.
Nobody cares
about why you want to be a doctor at this point. They want to know why you want to be an ophthalmologist or a surgeon or a neurologist or what nephrologist, whatever it might be.
Right, exactly.
You know, it's not so much the big names, it's a genuine interest mm-hmm. in the field.
Yeah.
Demonstrated interest.
I think you're absolutely right. And I think that I also made that very well known during all of my interviews. You know, I distinctly remember my interview at Mayo, and I remember the program director is a different program director than who we have now, but I loved her so much. And the whole interview, I just thought, I want to be just like you. And she just she is amazing. Just a phenomenal surgeon and mother, and just this incredibly inspiring woman who's had such a successful career. And I remember sitting there in my interview and saying to her, like, I am ready to work so hard and I want to be the best resident. And I am ready. I'm going to work so hard. And I just wanted to convey like how in it I was. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that did anything, but I matched there. And so I was just really honest. And I think you could tell how passionate I was about ophthalmology and that's what I really wanted to do. And then with fellowship. Yeah. Oh, sorry.
That was what I was going to ask. Go ahead.
Yeah. So fellowship was different.
Yeah.
One reason I think is because ophthalmic plastics is tiny. There's only 500 certified ophthalmic plastic surgeons like ever. And it's just the smallest community and everybody knows everybody. And there's only about 25 fellowships per year that each have one spot. And so it's just this teeny tiny little community. And I was really lucky at Mayo that we have 3 ophthalmic plastic surgeons at Mayo who are all super well connected within oculoplastics as a whole and know everybody. And so my letters just happened to come from really big names, mm-hmm. which I didn't do on purpose, but just by coming from Mayo, I was lucky that I had really great people vouching for me, which I think was huge. I did really well. I got way more interviews than I anticipated, and it's arguably one of the most competitive fields in all of medicine just because the numbers are so small and the match rate is pretty low. So I think that for me, my letter writers just happening to come from Mayo really helped me a lot. And then I had done some research in oculoplastics, but in general, I think my application was pretty straightforward. I do think that I was a little unique because of my YouTube and Instagram and all the social media stuff, which just makes me a little bit different.
Right.
And then I also developed this completely new interest during residency that I had no idea I was interested in. I mentioned that going into ophthalmology, I was really interested in international work. And then throughout residency, I really fell in love with education. And I've always loved teaching. I taught an MCAT class when I was in college, and that I've always taught my friends. That's how I studied. But I want to be a residency program director. And I feel so passionate about our residency. I think that my residency program at Mayo is so incredible. And I think that's made me want to be involved with resident education even more. And so I spoke a lot about my career goals of becoming a residency program director, which I think maybe also made me slightly unique applicant. But yeah, I think that having high letter writers was helpful for me. And then I also was slightly more strategic about my fellowship application. I did have my mentors make phone calls for me. Mm-hmm. I told my number one program that they were my number one and that I was ranking the number one. I was very direct about that. And that worked out in my favor as well. So I think maybe I was a little bit more strategic about it. But I don't know. I still think at the end of the day, I just wanted everybody that I was applying for their program. I just wanted them to know that I'm ready to work hard. I'm really passionate and I'm doing this because I love it. And I was really direct about my career goals and really specific about my career goals and just saying, this is who I am as a person. This is who you're going to get as a fellow. Cause that's what they want to know in as a, when you're applying for residency and when you're applying for fellowship, they want to know, who am I getting as a person? Because they're going to work so closely with you.
Mm-hmm.
I think medical school, it's not big a deal as in residency and fellowship when it's such a small program and they really want to know who you are.
I think you mentioned on your blog that also in your particular fellowship, you're actually, it's not even a fellowship at a particular hospital, it's with particular doctors, right?
Correct. Yes. You belong to the person. So this is fascinating. If the fellowship director that you match with, if they decide to move, if they get a new job, mm-hmm. then you have to move with them. So I matched in New York, but if my fellowship director decided to take up a new job at UCLA, I would be moving to LA.
Hi, and welcome.
Which is crazy. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So you really work so closely with that person. And so I think being true to yourself, being who you are, is very important.
Right. It almost sounds more like a PhD advisor in some respects.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. This is your mentor and this is going to be your person for your career.
Okay. What do you wish I had asked you?
Oh my goodness. What do I wish?
Covered a lot.
I know. I'm always so chatty.
No, I think we've covered a lot of ground.
Gosh, I don't know. Your listeners are motivated, great people, and I think that they just need to know that they need to follow their heart and work hard. And that's what I always say. As long as you're working hard and saying yes to opportunities, you're going to be led in the right direction for you. And that's what I've always told myself. As long as I'm working hard, then whatever's coming my way is leading me to the end point that I'm supposed to be. And it's changed. It's evolved over time. Even though I've wanted to do ophthalmology for so long, mm-hmm. I had no idea I wanted to do ophthalmic plastics and I had no idea I wanted to be a residency program director. And I think that just by saying yes to new opportunities and by always putting 100% into what I do, that's kind of helped me get to where I want to be. And so don't be scared or worried about the future. Just work hard and it'll work out.
Well, it certainly has worked out for you. Andrea, I think we're running out of time, and anyone listening is convinced that you are incredibly busy. And I want to thank you. I want to thank you so much for joining me for this podcast, and I want to thank you again for sharing your experience and perspective. Where can listeners find out more or connect with you? As you said, you have lots of social media outlets.
Yes. Well, thank you so much for having me.
My pleasure.
I'm pretty active on Instagram. My Instagram name is Dr. Andrea Tooley. And then I am sporadically posting YouTube videos, and that you can find those by just searching Andrea Tooley. My blog, I am evolving into more of just a standalone website, and I'm posting less and less because I want it to transition into more of just a professional space, because I am going to be out of training soon.
Yeah.
And I need to have a more professional space that's less of a trainee's blog and more of a professional website. So I'm less active there, but Instagram and YouTube are good places to find me.
Thanks again, Andrea. We're going to link from the show notes at exhibit.com/244 to Andrea's blog, even though it's not so active, her YouTube channel, and her Instagram account, as well as a few other related resources that we think might be helpful to you. And I'm going to tell you about one of those resources right now. For those of you planning to apply this summer to medical school, I'd like to invite you to the webinar I will present on Tuesday, February 13th, where I'm going to distill the application process down to 5 essentials in the 5-part framework for a successful medical school application. The webinar is free, but you do need to register. You can do so from a link in the show notes at exhibit.com/244. The actual URL is kind of long, so just go there. It's going to be simpler. Listener, thank you too for tuning in to this, our 244th episode. If you found this show worthwhile, please make sure you don't miss any others. Subscribe through your favorite podcatcher. We have subscribe links in the show notes at, you guessed it, exhibit.com/244. This is Admission Straight Talk produced by Accepted, and I am your host, Linda Abraham. I'll talk to you again next week.
Our theme music is provided by podcastthemes.com.